Okay, so it's Parshas Lech Lecha, page 54. Just to first of all, just go through a brief overview on Lech Lecha. So we know that in the beginning of Lech Lecha, Hashem tests Abraham with the test of Lech Lecha to go to Israel. He gets there, then we have the second test where he suddenly a famine breaks out and Abraham is forced to go down to Egypt. The whole story in itself, and it comes out okay. Then Abraham had Lot, his nephew, with him, but they end up splitting. There was a machloikas, there was a politics between the shepherds of Abraham and that of Lot. And Lot chooses to go to Sodom, which wasn't a very great place. Then we have the whole war between the four and the five kings, which we're going to go into a little bit today. And Abraham, Lot gets captured, and Abraham saves Lot. Of course, one very big feature of the Parsha of Lech Lecha is that we have a few times how God promises the land of Israel to Abraham. That's a very important part of Lech Lecha. Very current, of course, the promise, the Torah record of the promise that we have that the land of Israel belongs to us actually comes mainly from Lech Lecha. We have what's called the Bris Bein Absarim, which is the famous covenant that Abraham and God entered into, and that was when God revealed to Abraham that there would be a Golus, there'd be an exile of Egypt, and the Jews would be enslaved there, and eventually they'd be freed. Followed by the story of Hagar, because Sarah is at that point still childless, and she recommends that Abraham takes Hagar and they give birth to Ishmael. At the end of the parasha, Abraham and Sarai's name are changed to Avraham and Sarah. And then, of course, the parasha ends with the mitzvah of Bris Milah, of the circumcision that Abraham was given as a mitzvah until today, although we perform it today, not because it was given to Abraham, but because it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. That's all the mitzvahs are like that. But nevertheless, it's still referred to as the Brit Shav Avraham Avinu, the covenant of Abraham. Okay, now I'm going to go into something in the middle of the parasha a bit more in detail, but just to a little bit talk about the beginning of the parasha, which we've done many times, just to mention a couple of things that are important to mention at the beginning of the parasha. So, page 54, the parasha begins with Vayomer Hashem. Yes, Hamashim here, and handouts here. Yeah, thanks. Page 54 in the article, yeah. Vayomer Hashem El Avram, Hashem says to Abraham, Lech Lecha. Go lecha. That's a problematic word in itself. Me'atzecha, from your land. Me'latzecha, from your birthplace. Beit Avicha, from your father's home. Ela Eretz Asher Arakos, to the land that I will show you. Eschol Agoy, Godel, I will make you into a great nation. Ma'varechacha, I will bless you. Va'gad l'shmech, I'll make your name great. Ve'yehei bracha, and you will be for a blessing. Ma'varecha, ma'varecheka, I will bless those that bless you. Ma'kalelcha, or I will curse those that curse you, v'nivruchu v'chol kol mishpachei Yisrael adamah, and all the families of the land will become blessed from you. As Rashi explains, in other words, when they bless their children, they will say, you should be like Abraham, so to speak. Vayelech Abraham, and Abraham went, ka'asher dibur elav Hashem, as Hashem had spoken to him. Vayelech itoy loit, loit goes with him, v'Avram ben chameshonim, meshiv meshon, Abraham was 75 years old, but say so in Choron when he left Choron. And he made his way to Israel. So that's a big chunk of Abraham in his life has already passed, but he left Choron. We've pointed out many times before that Lech Lecha is a very significant parasha because we have Abraham being the first Jew, as we call him. But Abraham as the first Jew really only starts with Lech Lecha. And that's why Abraham's life is sort of split into two. The first 75 years we have very little detail. 4 or 5 psukim in the last parasha, and then suddenly tremendous detail from here onwards. Because before that, Avraham Avinu still believed in God, but it was more belief that he had developed on his own. But the Jewish neshama, the certainty, the absolute belief, the conviction that is unique to the neshama and the faith that a yid has, that starts with Avraham at Lech Lecha, when Avraham gets his first mitzvah, when God connects with him, in other words, able to go beyond himself, his finite self, and connect with an infinite God. That is the beginning of Lech Lecha, where Hashem gives him that first mitzvah, and that's where the real in a way, the history of the Jewish people begins. That's why from here we have a lot of detail. One of the things we pointed out many times in previous years, one of the things the Mefarshim battle with is the word lecha. Lech lecha. Right? The Ramban says, and Rashi as well, that lecha means for your benefit. Hashem was testing me, saying, I want you to uproot your family, I want you to leave, I want you to go away from your father's home, and so on, but it'll be for your benefit, right? Some of the Mefarshim have a problem with it, that they say it's not really the translation of the word lecha, number one. Number two, there's an interesting question, I think I might have mentioned this last year, that they ask, if Hashem told him, go for your benefit, so then what kind of test is that? The whole idea was supposed to be one of the tests, right? Son of Ravina is 10 tests. So he says, God, but I'm telling you, it's going to be really, really good. That minimizes the test. And I did see once an explanation, interesting explanation, that it was part of the test. Hashem was saying, go, it's going to be to your benefit, but I want you to go not for that reason. That's part of the test. How are you going to go? You know, I want you to go because it's a mitzvah. And that's why later on it says, in Pasuk Dalet, in the fourth Pasuk, it says, Vayelech Avram, and Avram went, Kasher Dibur Elav Hashem, as Hashem had spoken to him. In other words, he went for the right reason. He went because Hashem commanded. He didn't go because it was beneficial to him, although it was beneficial. Which obviously gives insight into a general concept of a mitzvah. Mitzvahs are also beneficial. You know, each mitzvah brings tremendous bracha. Different mitzvahs have different brachas associated with them. But the ultimate connection, I mean, obviously, do a mitzvah is better than not doing a mitzvah, but the ultimate way that we do a mitzvah is not because of its brachas. Right? The reason that we do a mitzvah is because Hashem said so. And Hashem chose the nation, He gave us the mitzvahs to do. He gave us Shabbos to keep, and tefillin to put on, and tzedakah to give, whatever the case is. Yes, it does bring brachas, and Hashem promises reward, and all that kind of stuff, but the real way of doing a mitzvah is to do what Hashem wants. And that's hinted in this concept.
It's Ma'aseh v'nishma.
Like Ma'aseh v'nishma, similar, yeah. The Kli Yakar gives a little bit of a different explanation of the word lecha, and he says, lech lecha means go to yourself, meaning, he says the following, he says that what happened here was, that it went in stages. Hashem said, lech lecha, go to lecha, to you, and He's going to show him how to do it. How does He do it? So first of all, Hashem weans him off. He says, go from your land, from your birthplace, and from your father's house. Famous question, it's in the wrong order. When the person leaves, he leaves first his own house, then his birthplace, then his country. And Hashem said to go on before, but what Hashem was doing, says the Kli Yakar, was He was breaking it slowly to him. He's saying, listen, this is going to be a difficult thing to do. First of all, you have to break away from your country. Now, a person's country is not that relevant to him. I mean, you don't get that much benefit by living in a country. In other words, yes, maybe you like the culture in that country, or you benefit from the general, broad culture of that particular country, but it's not like it's the end of like you must be in that country, right? So Hashem says that's the first thing you need to break away from. That's going to be the least hard one to do. First step. Second step is your town, your birthplace. That's a bit difficult. That's a bit different. Person much used to the place that they're born. They know where the local shopping centers are. I mean, whatever, right? They know where to go. They know the way around. They know the customers of the place. They know the. Yeah, I understand that. I'm talking about most people. Thank you. me would make a difference. It would be a test. Just people are used to the environment, the specific culture of the place they live. Well, Hashem says that's the second thing you need to do. And the third thing, of course, you need to break away from, Hashem says, is your father's house. That's really different. Your home. Your home is very difficult to go away from. That's a very difficult thing to break away. That's the person. The person, very, very much to a large extent, is the home that they grew up in. And Hashem says you need to go away from that as well. Why do you have to go away from all these things, Hashem says? Because you have to go, Elo'oretz asher areka. You have to go to the land that I will show you. Why? Why do you have to go to that? What are you going to find in that land that you're not finding here? Says the Kli Yakar, there you're going to find lecha. There you're going to find yourself, your inner source, your real essence. And he connects it, interestingly enough, because he says that journey was really only really complete with the 10th test of Avraham, which was the Akedah, at the end of next week's parasha, where Hashem says a similar language. He says, go, El Eretz Hamoria, Go to the Moriah, the land. He doesn't show him exactly which mountain. He says, go to the mountain that I will show you. He doesn't give him the exact specifics. Similar sort of thing. Why? Because he's linking it back to you. What happened? In Israel, you have Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, you have Har Moriah. Right? Mount Moriah, says the Kliyakar, is the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the place where the Mizbeach was built. Now the Rambam tells us that when it says in Bereishis 2 weeks ago that Hashem took the dust of the land and made clay and made the form of man, and in that form of man he blew into the nostrils a soul of life, that land, that earth, came from the Mizbeach spot. The spot of the Mizbeach, right? In fact, the way the Rambam quotes it is from the Gemara, I think, is Odom mimokom kaparosoi noilad. A person was created from the place of his own atonement. In other words, from the place that we connect to Hashem, essentially, the place of tshuva, the place where we really go beyond ourselves and connect with Hashem, that's where we were created from. In other words, what that place symbolizes is the true essence of the human being. The essence to grow, the essence to break away from ourselves, the essence to go out of the confines of the things that we're used to, either from our country or birthplace or our father's home, and that's the essence of who we are. But in order to discover that essence, we have to be ready to break. And that's what Hashem was telling Avraham Avinu. He says, Lech Lecha, the real test here is, Lech Lecha, go to yourself. This journey, this test, says Hashem to Avraham Avinu, is about discovering your true self. Where are you going to travel your true self? I can't tell you now, says Hashem, because you're not ready for it yet. I can't tell you exactly what it is. I'll show you. I'm going to lead you there. That's why it says, Allah Aretz Asher Areka. There's a number of reasons why Hashem wasn't specific, but this is one of them. He says, you're not ready for me to tell you exactly where this is. You don't know yet how to discover yourself. But I'm telling you, that's the goal. Lech Lecha, go to yourself, discover yourself. But in order to do that, there's three things you have to do in order of difficulty. You have to be ready to break away from your general country culture. Then even more specifically, your own environment, more specifically, your own parents' home, in order to discover who you really are, your inner essence. And he says that journey really was complete with when the language is similarly described by the Akedah, when he actually made it to the Har HaMoriah. That's when he actually came to the mountain of the Beis HaMikdash, the place where the Mizbeach was, and that's where the Akedah actually took place. From 75 to 137. Yeah, a while. But it was all part of the process. Because Avraham Avinu was 75 when he left Haran, Lech Lecha, and he was 137 when the Akedah took place. You know that, because Yitzchak was 37 and he had Yitzchak when he was 100. That's why I was 137. Okay. Now, I wanted to go into a bit of a different part of the parasha, which we often don't go into for some reason. It's always like that. Every parasha has like the famous key paragraphs everyone goes into. But sometimes it's nice to go into some things that are not. I think part of the reason is it's a little bit complicated, but it's interesting to have a look at this part of the parasha, which is the war between the four and the five kings, which it's almost not understood what the Torah wants with this story. It's like it's like almost seems like the detail that's mentioned in the story seems superfluous. It doesn't seem that relevant. And I wanted to show you how some of the details are actually very relevant, and they are part of the general journey of Avraham Avinu. Let's give you the background. Let's go to page 60. Okay, so let's just book backwards so you get the context. The story begins on the surface because of how it ends. Right? What I mean by that is, there was this, you know, in ancient times, in Israel particularly, I mean, we have this often in Chumash, there were many, many kings. In other words, you didn't have one king over the country. The country was called Eretz Canaan, or whatever the case is, but each town has its own king, so to speak, right? Meaning they governed themselves. They worked together. They were like different provinces, I suppose, of the same country, and each one had its own autonomy, on sort of jurisdiction. And there was this coalition of the four kings and the five kings, right? And what ends up happening is that the four kings fight against the five kings. They win the war. That's how strong the four. In other words, these four kings were more powerful than the five kings. Part of the war they won is part of the five kings was the king of Sodom, right? Who had Lot with him, right? Avraham Avinu's nephew, which we learned. So Lot gets captured, Avraham Avinu gets to know that Lot was captured, gets to mobilize an army, fights against the four kings who were more powerful than the five kings, wins the war, and saves Lot. That's the story. It ends off, he comes to Yerushalayim. Malki Tzedek was the king of Yerushalayim. Malki Tzedek, Rashi says, was the son of Noach. His name was Shem. He was like a servant of Hashem. He was like a Kohen. And Avraham Avinu ends up giving him a tenth of all the stuff that he gathered in the war. And that's how the story ends. Let's have a look at some of the psukim, and we'll try and go into some of them just to see some insights that come out of these psukim. So have a look. It says, Vayihi b'mei. It was in the time. The Torah gives an introduction, then gives detail. So first of all, it gives the introduction. Vayihi b'mei Amraphel Melech Shinar. It was in the time of Amraphel, the king of Shinar. Shinar was a place in Israel. They were all places in Israel, these places. Arioch Melech Elosar, Arioch the king of Elosar, Kedor Laomer Melech Elam, Kedor Laomer the king of Elam, the Sidol Melech Goyim, and Sidol the king of a place called Goyim. These are the four kings. Now, just look at your handout. Important to know for something which will come up soon. Who was Amraphel? Right? Well, the first king, he was Amraphel. Who was he? Says Rashi. Who? Nimrod. That's Nimrod. You heard of Nimrod? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nimrod was a terrible king. Nimrod was a person who was around when Avraham Avinu was a kid. In outside of Israel, in Terach's area. Okay, he was the one that was the cause of Avraham Avinu's first test. He threw Avraham Avinu into the furnace. And Avraham Avinu was saved from the furnace. Right? You know the story of the furnace. The furnace was Avraham Avinu's first test. Essentially, Terach had a whole problem. Terach was a devout follower of Nimrod. Nimrod, by the word Nimrod means to rebel, morad, to rebel against Hashem, right? Modern day Israelis are not aware of this because they call their kids Nimrod sometimes. I think I told you, I had a kid in my camp, I was a counselor of a kid in camp once called Nimrod. I felt bad for him, it was like a very funny name to have. Anyway, although I must point out an interesting thing, I once saw that someone approached the Rebbe once who had the name Nimrod and asked the Rebbe if he should change it, and the Rebbe said, it's not necessary. That's your name and that's fine. So I guess must have some good meanings too. So anyway, but that was Nimrod. So Terach goes to Nimrod and says, I've got a rebellious son. He's breaking my idols. You know the story of Avraham Avinu Medrash. Avraham Avinu broke all the idols in Terach's idol shop. So he reported him to Nimrod and he came before Nimrod. And Nimrod said to him, what do you believe in? He said, I believe in one God. Because at that point, Avraham Avinu had discovered monotheism. And Nimrod says, if you don't renounce that, I will throw you into the furnace. Avraham Avinu says, I'm okay with that. And he got thrown into the furnace and he survived, miraculously. Incidentally, Avraham Avinu had a brother called Horon, who is recorded when Terach has his three sons, Avram, Horon, and Nochar, and then suddenly Horon disappears. What happened was, according to the Medrash, that Horon was undecided. He was like an undecided voter, you know, like you talk about, wasn't sure what side he was on. And he decided he'll see. If Avraham Avinu survives the Kifshon HaEsh, he'll go with God. If not, he'll survive, it's not a problem. So Avraham Avinu survives, and Nimrod turns to Horon and says, and you say? He says, with God. So he threw him also into the furnace, and he didn't survive. Because that wasn't the faith that was deserving of being saved. Right? That was like, if Avraham Avinu gets saved, then, you know, if it's the winning team, I'll go with it. If it's not, I'm not going to go with it. That's not a munah. A munah means you go with it regardless, right? Okay. We have to, yeah, so Nimrod was the one who threw Avraham Avinu into the furnace. This story, by the way, is not explicit in the Chumash. It's hinted in the Chumash. Because it says that Avraham Avinu was born in Ur Kasdim. There's no such place called Ur Kasdim. He wasn't born in Ur Kasdim. It says he was born in Ur Kasdim. Ur Kasdim didn't exist. Ur Kasdim means Ur, the word Ur means a furnace. So that was hinting to the story that he was thrown into the furnace. Okay. It was in the region of it. I mean, he was born in that region, but not Ur Kasdim is a remez. It's a hint to that story. So now we come. We suddenly discover a king called Amraphel. Says Rashi, look at the handout. Who Nimrod is Nimrod? Because why is he called Amraphel? Sha'amar le'Avram, because he was called Amraphel because he said to Avram, pull the toich kifshano eish, fall into the furnace of fire. So Amraphel comes from two words. Amar pull. He said, be thrown into the furnace. That's where the term Amraphel comes. Okay? So interesting, one of these four kings is actually the Nimrod that Avraham Avinu had encountered as a child. Okay. So says the next pasuk, these four kings, Osu Milchama, they waged a war. Es Bera Melech Sdoim, Bera the king of Sdoim, Es Birsha Melech Amoira, the Birsha the king of Amoira, Shinov Melech Admo, Shinov the king of Admo, Shem Ever Melech Tzvoim, Shem Ever the king of Tzvoim, Melech Bela Yitzoyer, and Bela who is the king of Tzoyer. Okay. Now we're not going to do the next psukim, I'll just give you a bit of background. The next psukim go into the details, what actually happened. That they'd all been serving Gedalah Omer for a number of years, and they rebelled, and there was this, and there was that. Bottom line is, at the end, it climaxed into this war. Okay. So let's have a look. I'll show you in Have you good look in Pasuk Zayin, Pasuk 7, right? No, sorry, Pasuk Ches, Pasuk 8. They were back and forth. There was a lot of tension in the region. And suddenly then, Vayetze Melech Sdoim Melech Hamoira Melech Admo Melech Soyer Melech Bela Yitzoyer, the five kings came out, and they started to zit, we're going to wage war against the four kings. Vayarchu Itom Melchoma, and they waged the war against them, Be'emek Hasidim, in a place called Emek Hasidim, that was the battleground. Right? Eis Kedor La'Oim Melech Elam, Mesidim Melech Goyim, Rav Melech Shinov, Arach Melech Lassar, Arba Melechim Melech Hamisha, the four against the five. So it says, Ve'emek Hasidim Be'eres Be'eres Chemor, says the Pasuk, the valley of Sidim was full of these called, they can't translate as bitumen wells, whatever that means. Like these wells, they all fell there, it was a very bloody war. Ve'yonusu Melech Sdoim Ve'amoira, and what ended up happening was actually that the Melech Sdoim and the Melech Amoira, the king of Sdoim and Amoira, had to flee. Ve'yiplu Shom, and they fell there. Ve'anish Orim Heranosu, the rest of them ran to the mountains, and it was just a disaster. The four kings won, essentially. Vayichu is called Rechush Sdoim Ve'amoira. So the four kings took all the property, all the assets of Sdoim and Amoira. It's called Ochlam, and all of their food. Vayilechu, and they went. Vayichu is Loit ben Rechusha ben Achi Avram. The point was that they also captured, among everything else, Loit, the nephew of Avram, Vayilechu, and they went. Vuhu Yoshev b'Sdoim, and he was sitting in Sdoim. He was living in Sdoim at the time, which is a bit of a shtech to him, because the pasuk is hinting to him, why was he captured? Because he was Sdoim in the first place. He shouldn't have been in Sdoim. That was the whole story in the beginning, in the middle of the parasha, where Avraham Avinu suggested that him and Loit live in different places, and Loit chose Sdoim because there was a lot of money and it was good pastures, but really it was a very bad and evil place. But anyway, that's why he was there. But nevertheless. Okay. Vayovoi hapolit, the refugee, the fugitive came. Vayaged la Avraham Ivri, and told Avraham the Ivri. Where was Avraham at the time? Now, who was this refugee? Who was this fugitive? It was Oig Melech HaBosh, one of the giants. Then later, in the time when the Yidden were in the desert, he lived for a long time, he became the king of Bosh, one of the fierce kings outside of Israel, which Moshe Rabbeinu fought a war against. But at the time, he was a very powerful guy. Many of his friends had been killed in the war, but he managed to run away, and he ran away and he came to Avraham Avinu. Where was Avraham Avinu at the time? V'hushoichen be'eloine Mamre ha'emoiri. He was living in the plains of Mamre the Emoiri. Achi Eshkol v'Achi Oner, who was the brother of Eshkol and the brother of Oner. They were three brothers, and they were very good friends of Avraham Avinu. V'hem Bale Bris Avraham. They were the men of covenant of Avraham. Rashi explains later on, when Hashem gave the test of circumcision to Avraham Avinu, Avraham Avinu consulted with these three. Later on, it's hinted that as well. So what happens? He comes and tells Avraham what happened, that his nephew has been captured. V'yishma, let's do this pasuk slowly. V'yishma Avraham. Avraham heard. Ki nishba ochiv. That his brother had been captured. It's not his brother, it was his nephew, but it's called his brother, his brother's son. So what did he do? Vayorek es chanichov. Vayorek means he armed, that's a simple translation, he armed his disciples. Right? Yelidei beisai, who had been born in his house. How many did he arm? How many did he mobilize? Shmoina osar ushloish meos, 318. Vayirdoif ad Don, and he pursued, he started to run, and he came till Don. We'll see why Don. Don was an area before the four kings were there. But then eventually he passed Don, and he came to where the four kings were. Vayecholek aleihem laila, and he fought with them the entire night. Hu va'avod of him and his servants. Vayakem, and he smote them. He struck them. Vayirdofum ad Choiva, and he pursued them as far as a place called Choiva. asher mismol Damesek, which is north of Damascus. Vayoshev is kol arachush, and he gave back all the booty. Vagamas loit achiv, and he gave back, and he returned his nephew, rachusha heshiv. He gave back all the people that were escaped. The gamas hanashim, the women, the arm, the nation, he gave back. He restored Sodom to its, not because he liked Sodom, but because he wanted, it was all because of his nephew Lot. Okay, let's just learn two more psukim quickly. Then Vayetze Melech Sodom Nikrasai, the king of Sodom came out to meet him, Achri Shumakat, the Lamas of Lachom Shaita, Lame Kshava, Melech Melech, etc. Then the Pasuk says, Pasuk Yutches, next Pasuk 18, Umalki Tzedek, finally we find a new king. When Avraham Avinu came back, Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem, Avraham Avinu was on the way home, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, which is Yerushalayim, Hoitzi Lechem Vayoyin, he brought out wine and bread, V'hukoyin L'keil Elyon, and he was a priest for Hashem, V'yivracheyu, and he came out to greet Avraham, and he benched him, and he said, Baruch Avraham L'keil Elyon, Koyin Hashemayim V'oretz, and so on and so forth. V'varuch K'el Elyon Hashem Migin Tzurecho V'yodecho, V'yitein Lei Meister Mikoyl, and Avraham Avinu gave him a tenth of all that he had. That's the end of the story. Now, let's have a look at Rashi. Let's just see two Rashis on the Pasuk Yudalet, Pasuk 14, which says that Avraham Avinu heard that his nephew had been captured, and he mobilized this army of 318 people. Says Rashi, Shmoyna Asar, 18 people. Sorry, 318 people. Says Rashi, Rabbi Seinu Omru, our rabbis tell us, that Eliezer Levadoi Hoyo. He didn't mobilize an army of 318 people. He just took Eliezer with him. Eliezer was his very devoted slave. So how does 318 come into the picture? V'hu minyan gematria shel shmoy. It's the gematria of Eliezer's name. Take Eliezer's 318, right? And he took him, and that was 18, yeah. Okay? It's also hinted, I didn't copy this right, it's also hinted in the fact that it says, if you look in the Pasuk again, on the end of page 62, it says, Vayorek es chanichov, he mobilized, he armed his disciples, right? So in the Torah, it's missing a yud in the word chanichov. And you could read it as chanichoi, his disciple, which is part of the hint of why we know it was only one person. Why does it say 318? That was the gematria of Eliezer's name. Which in itself is a very strange thing, because it's very unlike Rashi, that. Like, it's very midrashic. Rashi is very pshat. Pshat is, he mobilized his disciples, took 318 people. What's the problem? Okay, we'll see. Says Rashi, Adon, he ran till dawn. How did that come into the story? Because what happened was, says Rashi, Shom Toshash Koichai. When he pursued the four kings, he was running, and on the way there was a place called Don, where eventually the tribe of Don would live. And he suddenly became weak, Avraham Avinu. Why did he become weak? He saw that his children were going to serve idols there. They were going to make a golden calf, like similar to the desert. And that's why over there he became a little bit weak, but then he kept going. So he realized spiritually that was a problem. He's going to have children that are going to serve idols, so he became weak, and then he kept going, and the Pasuk finds it fit to tell us that whole story. That's the story in a nutshell. Now let's try and understand a little bit some of the details of the story. First of all, just tell you some what the Medrash says. The Medrash says that what was this Oig Melech HaBoshan, this giant Oig, he came to tell the news. What was his issue? Not because he was such a tzaddik. First of all, Oig, says the Medrash, he had an ulterior motive. The reason that he came to tell Avram that Lot had been captured was because he wanted to marry Sarah. So he figured, very simple, it was a simple plan. He'll tell Avraham Avinu that Lot is captured. He knows Avraham Avinu how devoted, what a kind of devoted family guy is. He's definitely going to kind of rescue Lot. There's no way he's going to match up to these four kings that were so strong. He's going to fall, he'll be killed, he'll take Sarah. That was his thing, right? Now, that's what the Medrash says. The Medrash says that when Oig arrived to Avraham Avinu, actually, it was Pesach night. And according to many Midrashim, this war took place on Pesach night. First night of Pesach. It's a little bit significant, we'll see later. Right? And he came to Avraham Avinu, and he saw Avraham Avinu was baking matzahs. It was Pesach night. So he put up a front, he prepared, says the Medrash prepared to be very interested in the matzah. Why are we doing this? Why are we keeping matzah, etc., etc., which is actually why he got his name, because the word oi comes to the word uga, which is like a cake, a cracker, which later by next week's parasha we see that Avraham Avinu gave, Eloit gave the malachim, those angels that came to Sodom, he gave them ugois matzahs. Or Avraham Avinu also baked ugois, like cakes, which are really a reference to matzahs. All right. Now, what was also Oig's reasoning for this? Because he knew that Nimrod had a particular interest in this war. Because Nimrod, who was Amraphel, that's how we said Amraphel is Nimrod, Nimrod had this grudge against Avraham Avinu for many, many years. Don't forget, as a kid, he had tried to kill Avraham Avinu for not serving idols, and he had thrown him into the furnace, and he'd been defeated because Avraham Avinu was miraculously survived, right? So Nimrod hadn't forgotten what happened to Avraham Avinu, and Nimrod was interested in killing Avraham Avinu, which is why he captured Lot. He wasn't interested in Lot, says the Medrash. What did he need Lot for? He could let him go. He captured Lot because he wanted Avraham Avinu to come and fight the war so he could kill Avraham Avinu and pay him back for when he was a kid, right? In other words, Oig and Amraphel had both interesting motives. They were both after Avraham Avinu. So therefore, that's why Nimrod and Oig kind of sort of partnered over here. Nimrod sends Oig to go and tell Avraham Avinu that Lot had been captured. Avraham Avinu comes and, Oig comes and tells Avraham Avinu should be captured so that Avraham Avinu should fight the war. It wasn't something that Nimrod resisted. He wanted Avraham Avinu to come fight because he wanted to kill Avraham Avinu so he should get him back for what happened to him as a child. Okay. That's what happened. Now, let's understand what happened over here. Avraham Avinu, we get this detail that Avraham Avinu goes and fights this war. So the Kliyokra says an interesting thing. Kliyokra is very, very bothered by this Rashi. That Rashi says that it wasn't 318 people. It was just Eliezer. Okay. He says, what do you mean? Like, the Pasuk says that he took 318 people. Why would you want to change that? Right? Says the Kliyokra, interesting thing. He says that Rashi actually does not mean to say that he didn't take 318 people. Of course he took 318 people. The question is why he took 318 people. Right? So the Kliyokra says an interesting thing. Kliyokra says like this. He said, Avraham Avinu knew that he's got to fight this war. He's got to fight this war. He had bitachon, he had trust that he will win this war. And we'll see. He didn't take with himself only a physical army. He took with himself spiritual powers, and we'll see what the spiritual powers he took was in a moment. But Avraham Avinu knows like this. When you fight a war that's going to be miraculous, even if you want something to happen that's going to be miraculous, you have to make some, the way Hashem wants to run the world is al pi teva, according to nature. You need to establish some natural means for this bracha, for this blessing, for this miracle to take place on, right? So he knew he's got to put together some army, otherwise it won't happen. But he knows that whatever army puts together, the whole thing has to be a miracle anyway, right? So the question is, how big should this natural vessel be? How big should his army be? The whole thing is going to be a nest anyway, it's going to be a miracle anyway. But okay, you've got to create the vessel in the world of nature, so how big? He thinks 300, 200, 100, 1,000, what's the number? So Avraham Avinu comes to a conclusion, 318. Why 318? Because that was the gematria of Eliezer. And Eliezer was a devoted Talmud, and Eliezer was a big tzaddik, and he had a very big schus. So therefore, Avraham Avinu figures, he puts together an army that's 318 strong. That's the gematria of Eliezer's name. That'll be the right thing to do. That's that Kliyokra sort of puts together what Rashi says with a simple pshat. He says that's what Rashi means. It doesn't mean he didn't take his off an army. He means he took with 318 people so that it should be the gematria of Eliezer. Right? Now, why the gematria of Eliezer? He says, first, Eliezer was a tzaddik, but Eliezer also, his name was Eliezer. What's the word Eliezer mean? The word Eliezer means that Hashem helps. Kael Ezer. It's the recognition that the ultimate help comes from Hashem. So Avraham Avinu puts together an army because he's got to make a keli in teva. He's got to make a natural vessel. So what does he do? He puts together a natural vessel that will demonstrate that he realizes the vessel is just a vessel, but the real help comes from Hashem. What does he do? He puts together like the gematria of Eliezer, which is Kael Ezri, the Hashem is my help. Right? So much so that Avraham Avinu realizes that Hashem is his help, which is why the Pasuk tells us that when he got to Don, he got afraid. Because when he got to Don and he realized this is the place where his own descendants are going to do something against Hashem, So he was afraid maybe my spiritual divine assistance is not going to work so well. But then he realized, no, he's going to continue, he's going to do it. But that's why he became afraid when it came to dawn, because he weakened, because the whole thing was run on spiritual divine intervention, which he thought, if the whole thing you trust is just a physical army, there's nothing to do with what's going to happen to his descendants. It's how strong the army is. But because he realized that the army is really insignificant, you got to have it, but it's really Hashem's help that he's helping him. So he realizes that he's got to get all the spiritual koyach that he can. And therefore, the fact when he comes to Don and he feels there's an energy of his descendants serving over the Zara, he was a bit afraid that divine intervention wouldn't work that well. Okay. So what's this divine intervention? With what koyach did he go? So we find an incredible thing. We find two things that come out from this pasuk. One is about Torah learning, and one is about tefillah, the power of prayer. So I'll share with you something I saw that was said by a rabbi called Reb Mordechai Dov Edelberg, who was the rabbi of Nikolaev. And this speech was given in 1921, where there was a yeshiva called Yeshivas Knesses Beis Yitzchak. It was just after the First World War, and it was a lot of yeshivas had been displaced. Right? You know that what happened between the First World War and the Second World War, there was a lot of yeshivas that before the First World War were strong. First World War sort of displaced a lot of yeshivas, and then they had to reestablish. By the time the Second World War came, the yeshivas had reestablished themselves, and then a lot of them got destroyed. Right? So this Rav, he gave a speech that people should support this yeshiva. It was a fundraising speech, essentially, but that's what it was. But he wanted to explain the importance of a yeshiva. So he said the following. He said that when Avraham Avinu heard that Lot had been captured, maybe the fundraiser was in Parshas Lech Lecha, I don't know, but not doesn't say when it was, but this is where. Right? So he says that when Avraham Avinu heard that Lot had been captured, so he said that he mobilized an army. Now again, just look at the bottom of page 62. It says Vayorek es Chanichov, which literally means he armed his disciples, right? But the Gemara in Nedarim says the following. Gemara in Nedarim says that what does it mean Vayorek? It means he taught them Torah. Taught them Torah. Why? Because the word Vayorek means to like empty out. Like when you pour a bucket, when you empty out a bucket, it's also like to empty out something. Lahoirik means to empty out a bucket. You would use the same word vayorek, and because Torah is compared to water, so it means he emptied out the bucket towards his disciples, which means he taught them Torah. That's what the Gemara says in the Dorit. So he asks the question. He says, "This is bizarre." Avraham Avinu gets the news that Lot is captured. He's got to get together an army. He's about to go fight this miraculous war, the war that, according to the world of nature, is impossible to win. What does he do? He sits down with his household and he gives them a shir, first of all. First of all, he says, let's learn some Torah. And then we'll go to war. He says, it's crazy. It's a war to be run, right? It's urgent. So he says, no, it's very simple. If you look in Tanakh, there's a very famous story with Yehoshua. So Yehoshua takes the Jews into the land of Israel, right? And he's about to fight the battle of Jericho. Now Jericho was an incredibly powerful town. Jericho, right? Surrounded by a wall, very, very fortified. He has no idea how this is going to happen, how he's supposed to fight the war. Okay. So he's getting ready. The whole Jewish people are camping outside Jericho. They're coming from the desert. They've crossed the Yarden. And suddenly, it's at night time. The next day, the war is supposed to be fought. A malach appears to him. In the form of a man. Yeshua gets a malach with a drawn sword. It's a story in Tanakh. Yeshua sees this man opposite him and he says, whose side are you on? Like, who's Hashashalon? Are you on our side or the enemy's side? Like, who are you? So he says, no, I'm an angel. I'm Malach Michal. That was the angel Michal. And he says, first of all, I've come to tell you, you don't have to be worried about Jericho. Hashem will take care of it. He tells him what to do. They circle the city. They blew the shofar. The city fell on its own. Okay, so Yeshua is a little bit relieved. And then Yeshua says to him, well, if you came, just tell me the good news. Why are you holding a sword? Like, why are you ready for battle? Why are you ready to kill me? So he says, because you've done something really wrong. So he says, what did you do wrong? So he tells him like this. Yesterday, you did two things wrong. You had the Jewish people with you. You were so preoccupied with the war that you had to fight, you did two things wrong. First of all, you didn't bring the Korban Tomid. There's a daily sacrifice that was supposed to be brought every single day. They'd put up a makeshift Mishkan, and you didn't bring the Korban Tomid in the afternoon. And second of all, you didn't learn Torah yesterday. You went to sleep not in the context of learning. So Yeshua says to him, okay, I understand the two things I've done wrong, so tell me which one is the main one. Which one is like the real problem? So if you look in the pasuk there, the Malach says, Shel ato basi, I came for now. In other words, one you're doing now wrong. That you haven't learned Torah. So Yeshua promises to do tshuva. He obviously gathered the people. They learned, they studied, and then they went on to fight the war of Yericho. So the Zerav says, we live in turbulent times, but without the study of Torah, the Yidden cannot exist. Right? And he says, that's the pshat in Avraham Avinu. Vayorek eschanichov, he mobilized his army. According to the Gemara, the Dorim means he taught them Torah. He gave them a shir. So we're going to have to war, but let's learn something first. Because obviously we're going to have to fight the war. Yes, according to the Kli Yachar, we have to put together an army. Obviously, we've got to fight. We need soldiers, we need ammunition, we need a strategy. But we have to have the study of Torah. Otherwise, the war won't be won. The power of Torah is so central to the Jewish people that without they won't be won. That's one pshat in this pasuk of Ayorek Eschanich. Okay. But there's another pshat. I'm going to share with you another pshat, which is the power of davening, because you need both. You need Torah and you need davening. And the other pshat comes from a great Hasidic commentary on the Chumash called the Mo'er V'Shomesh. One of the great Hasidic rebbes, not sure exactly which one he was or when he lived, but he was, I think, at the Talmud of the Mezritcha Magid somewhere. And he brings Rashi, and he brings the Medrash that it wasn't really 318 people, it was just Eliezer, and so on and so forth. So he says, if that's the case, so why 318? What's the significance of 318? Obviously, there must be something in this number, right? It's not just that Eliezer happened to have the Gematria of 318, so therefore he chose 318 people, or according to the Pshat, Midrashic Pshat, he didn't choose anyone, he just took Eliezer because 318. What's the number 318? So he says, first of all, he starts to talk about the concept of tefillah. So as we know, the tefillah, we know that the davening that we daven was instituted by the Ovos, by the patriarchs, right? Avraham Avinu made Shacharis, Yitzchok made Mincha, Yaakov made Maariv, and so on and so forth, right? And the expression that the Gemara uses is, tefillos Ovos tiknum, that our prayers were instituted, they were rectified. Tiknum, letaken means to fix. They were like fixed by the Ovos. What does that mean? He says it doesn't mean that they were the ones to come up with the idea of davening only. What does it mean that they affixed the davening? It means that they put the davening in place with the power of tefillah. That the ones to institute, the ones to affix, the ones to establish davening, meaning the ones to come with their great righteousness and piety and establish the relationship between us and Hashem, that davening should be effective, was the patriarchs. Right? That's the concept. So he says, what's the word for tefillah? What is one of the words? Tefillah has many, many words. One of the words for tefillahs is siach, to speak. We find this by Yitzchak. It says Yitzchak went into the field, lasuach basade, to speak in the field, and we say that it means davening, right? In Bereshis it says that Hashem created Gan Eden, but it didn't grow. The plants were there, it didn't grow. Why? It says v'chol siach hasode. It uses the word siach, hadn't grown yet, because there was no man to work the land. And Rashi says, what does that mean? There was no man to work the land. Not there was no man to dig the land. Rashi says there was no man yet to daven for rain. That's what it didn't rain. Hashem creates Gan Eden, he creates the fields, he creates the ground, the produce, but it's not growing. Why is it not growing? Because it's not raining. Why is it not raining? Because there's no man. Why? The pasuk says the word siach, because there was no man to daven yet for rain. It says the Moreh V'Shomesh, why is davening called siach? Because the word siach is shin yud ches. Shin is 300. Which corresponds to the three Ovos, the three patriarchs who instituted tefillah. Yudches is 18, corresponding to the 18 main brachas of the Amidah. That was the original structure of tefillah. Today we have 19, but it's still called the Shemoneh Esrei. There was the original 18 brachas of Shema. That's why tefillah is called siach, because we daven on the merit of the Ovos, the forefathers, the patriarchs, the shin, three legs of the shin, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because it's in their merit that our tefillahs are effective. What do we daven? We daven 18, which is the 18 brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. Siach, 318. That's why 318. That's why Abraham Avinu comes and he has to fight the war. Cannot fight a war without tefillah. By Yorek Eschanichov, he mobilizes the army. How many? 318. He davens. So before he goes out to war, he learns and he davens. And it's with that koyach that he's able then to fight the war. Yes, with an army, according to the Kliyoker. It wasn't just Eliezer. It was 318 people. But that's the whole number of 318, and that's the preparation that Avraham Avinu made in order to fight this war. Says the Sochachava, what's the significance of this war? This is a beautiful thing. He says, what's the story? What's the story about? What do we need the story for? So we know the concept, Maisa Ovoi Simen Labonim. That's why we have all these stories. That whatever happened to our patriarchs is a simen, it's a sign to what was going to come later in Jewish history. Right? You're aware of that? That's a famous concept. Which is why we have all the stories. And as the Rebbe often explains, that when we say that the stories of the patriarchs or the matriarchs are a simen, it's a sign of what was going to come. It's not just a sign, not just a symbol. It means what happens to the forefathers gave koyach, paved the way, injected into us the power to withstand or to survive or to manage whatever was going to happen to us in future generations. So he says, what are Avraham Avinu do here? He fought a war against four kings. He says, these four kings, we know, Chazal tell us that there are four Golios, four exiles, four main areas of persecution that the Jewish people suffered. Now, I must tell you that and this is important the way he puts it, because the four exiles is often, it's not clear which they are. The Gemara is full of this Dalet Golios, there's four exiles. But it's not clear how you count them. And there's two ways to count them. One way to count them is with Mitzrayim, the other one is to count them without Mitzrayim. In other words, one way is to count them without Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was in the background, that was the foundation of Golos and Geula, exile and redemption. The Jews weren't a nation yet. It means after the nation became a nation, there were four exiles outside of Mitzrayim. And that's the one he takes. You'll soon see why. So he says, what are the four? What are the four things? The four ones is Babylon, Bavel, Modai, Mede, which came after Babylon. The story of Purim happened in that context. Greece, the Yevonim, the Greeks, who persecuted the Jewish people around the Hanukkah story. And then Edom, Rome. And everything that happens after Edom is all an extension of Edom. Right, we're still in Golas Edom. We're still in the exile of Edom. So Avraham Avinu fights the war against the four kings. He says, why? To show that there would be four kings. There's going to be four Golias. These four kings represent the four exiles. There will be that his descendants, Avraham Avinu's descendants, will be subject to the persecution of the four Golias, the four exiles, the four kings. But he fights the war with the power that he fights the war, with the 318, the Torah, the Tefillah, to show that eventually, just as he wins the war, and he wins the war with these strategies, his descendants will also win the war. Ultimately, we win the war, and everything will be restored the way it should be. All right? Then he says, so that's the story of the four kings. Obviously, he doesn't say this, but we can extrapolate to the things we said before. That if we understand that, then we have to understand that we have to fight the war the same way he fought the war. That ultimately, why are we still here? Why are we still fighting? I mean, we haven't finished the war yet. Why are we still fighting the war? Why have we overcome? Well, we haven't overcome Rome completely yet, but because we're still an extension of that goal. Why do we overcome Babylon and Mede and Greece? And we will overcome Rome as well. The Golos Bavel, the Golos Sarim Yamin, Edom. Why? Because we have a koyach, we have powers. Not because of only our physical powers, but because we have powers that transcend nature. Where do those powers come from? They come from the two things that Avraham Avinu used to fight the war, Torah and Tefillah. That's the DNA. That's our very aspect of survival. So he says, there's another concept we have to understand. There's another tool that we have to also take on board. And if Avraham Avinu's fight with the four kings is to symbolize our fight against the four exiles, then we have to take the order of the Sedra very seriously. He said, this story happens after another story. It happens after the story where Avraham and Sarah go down to Egypt. And they land up in an immoral land. Right? How do we know it's an immoral land? Because that's the whole story of Avraham and Sarah, that Avraham turns to Sarah and says, we're in trouble, we're coming down to an incredibly immoral land. That they will want to marry you, they'll want to take you away, they'll kill me on that account. So let's see what we can do. Eventually Sarah gets captured. She gets taken to Paro's place and she comes out completely protected. As we know, the Medrash and Rashi explains that she was not violated at all. She was protected. Okay, Hashem sent a disease for the skin of the Egyptians and the whole story. But she comes out perfect and he comes out perfect. So Avram and Sarah both descend into a world of complete immorality, right? And come out, okay. Come out completely pure. What was that all about? That was the Yidden going into Mitzrayim. So what brought about the foundation to the four exiles and the foundation to the survival of the four exiles is all based on the story of Egypt, that the Yidden go into Mitzrayim and they survive. And we know later on, he doesn't say this, but later on we had a whole shiur in it a few months ago, right? That they also live a life of complete purity there. Later on, we know that Hashem puts his name against all the families of the Parshas. Remember that? The Parshas Pinchas. To show that they were all pure, that they weren't, except for one incident. They didn't commit adultery, they were pure, even though they lived for 400 years or 210 years in this incredible immoral land. Right? But they stood apart and they retained their identity and they retained their purity and they fought along and they came out of Mitzrayim whole and perfect. So that story happens before the story of the four kings, because Avraham Avinu went and he fought the kings. The four kings, how did he win? Also on the schus, besides the Torah and the Tefillah, he also won the war on the schus, on the merit of the purity and the survival that him and Sarah were able to retain and establish while they were in the land of Egypt. So that's also for us, an understanding that's part of what we have to do, that when we're in Golus, and part of that Golus, and part of the four exiles is not only a physical exile. We know this today more than any other times. That part of our exile is not a physical exile, although there is physical persecution and oppression also. But part of that is not about physical oppression and persecution. It's about the persecution of immorality. It's about the persecution of materialism. It's about the persecution of abundance and being free, right? And that's the one, that's the real Mitzrayim, and that's what we have to be very, very careful of. That's what we have to protect ourselves against. That's what we have to fight against and retain our purity. And with that schus, we're able to push on and eventually win the war against the four kings and complete that whole journey, where the completion of that journey obviously ends with the whole coming of Mashiach, which Emirat Hashem will come very soon. Okay. I was going to go into the whole story of giving a tenth of Meiser, but we'll have to do it another time.